This podcast is part of the Shareable Podcast Network. Learn more at shareable.fm. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line, but rarely do successful people get from point A to point B taking the most direct route. Host Jeffrey Klein speaks to a diverse mix of people to explore their story of success and the dots connected along the way. Thank you for listening. Here's your host, Jeffrey.
This episode is radical as I chat with my great friend Donnie as he shares his story from magic to marketing to his passion for plant-based living and being driven to make a difference and have an impact. Enjoy. My guest today is Donnie Makower, a 20-year veteran of the digital marketing space who realigned his personal and professional endeavors around his conviction for animal advocacy and plant-based living. He is CEO and co-founder of Radical Superfoods, a direct-to-consumer brand that provides delicious, plant-based, functional superfoods. Donnie is also a passionate public speaker and the chairman of the board of the Gentle Barn, a national nonprofit organization specializing in the rehabilitation of abused and neglected animals. Donnie lives in Los Angeles with his wife, their two children, and two rescue dogs. Welcome, Donnie.
Thank you very much.
And he's also one of my really good friends.
That is true. I'm happy to be here.
So I like to start in the beginning. So where did you grow up and what did your parents do for livings?
I grew up in the Chicagoland area, in the suburbs, actually. And I spent a good half my life there. And my parent, you know, my mom was in the jewelry business. She was actually a wholesaler and sold jewelry to stores. And my dad, he's someone with an MBA and two engineering degrees. And he's actually had a few different businesses over the years. And, really interesting. And
yeah, sounds like he's really stupid too.
Yeah, exactly.
With that kind of background, someone who's had a variety of things, did you, I always like curious about what people want to do when they grow up. So did you think business, were you like into business or engineering or what was it you thought, or astronaut? You know, that's what all the kids want to be when they grow up.
Well, when I was a kid, how early are we talking?
You know, 8 to 12, we'll say.
Okay. Like, well, when I was an 8-year-old to 12-year-old, I probably wanted to be a magician at that point because I had already picked that up as a hobby. I took it quite seriously. I was really learning sleight of hand and I was able to fool my parents' friends. So I realized, wait, I'm not just fooling other 8-year-olds, I'm fooling adults. So I was onto something really fun. And had you asked me then what I want to be when I grow up, I would have said, well, I want to be a magician.
How early did you start magic?
It started for me by getting one of those magic kits of like, you know, hat full of magic kind of things. And then it evolved into me going to more of like a professional magic shop in Chicago where I would buy kind of quote unquote real tricks and I would start buying books and things like that. But started pretty early.
Why did magic appeal to you?
Well, I watched a couple of shows. I went to a live show with a magician years ago that my dad took me to, a magician named Doug Henning. He had really long hair and these really elaborate contraptions on stage. It was super fun. And, you know, also grew up watching like David Copperfield on TV. And I think just seeing it, I just got drawn into it and just took it on as a hobby. And then the more I did it, I actually started getting hired out to do magic shows and I would do like birthday parties and little events and stuff like that. Even as I, in high school and college and things like that. So for a number of years, I actually was performing magic on the side just for fun.
And I'll share a story that you know very well, but because you're a member of the Magic Castle, this magician's club in LA that I've had the pleasure of going with you, we saw a magician once who was amazing, Andrew Golden Hirsch. And one of the things that's cool about the Magic Castle is afterwards, you'll be in the bar and there are the magicians just hanging out. And I remember you going up to him and knowing that you knew him from other high school or college. And it turned out you went to college together and you were kind of the reason he became a magician because he sought you out and then got sick and then all he did was magic. and now he was a professional magician.
Yeah, I don't know that I could go so far as say that I was the reason he became a magician, but I do remember that when we were in college, we had met a few times. He was getting into magic. At that point, I actually knew more magic than he did, I think. He was newer to it. Now there's not even a remote comparison. Like for me, it's like a fun hobby. He's like a really amazing magician, you know, and he's it's quite impressive. So our skills aren't in the same universe.
Well, you had an influence, I'm sure. Like that's
but you know, certainly I guess back when we were in college, it's a number of years ago. You know, there were some things to talk about and share tricks. But I can't remember to what degree I inspired him or not, but I know that he was into it at least to some degree when we met.
And you know, I'm kind of obsessed with, you know, the power of story and storytelling. So who do you think is a really great storyteller and what makes them good?
Well, you know what? I've always been a huge movie fan. So whenever I think of great storytelling, my mind goes to movies. And while it's probably cliche at this point because he's such a popular director, but you know, I always think of Spielberg because again, growing up in primarily in the 80s and you know, so many of those hit movies that he made were part of my childhood and are just sort of burned into memory. And so he definitely stands out as a really adept storyteller.
I think if we had a list of the top 10 storytellers in history, he probably would make it.
He'd probably be one of them. Yeah.
And so as you grew up doing magic and then you grew up also doing martial arts. I know you're very into karate and then kung fu. So what, and I know part of it was discipline, but part of it was health. When did health and kind of nutrition become important to you?
You know what? So in 2012, which is now, I've jumped way past childhood and things like that. But in 2012, and I was already living in Los Angeles, my sister, who's totally okay today, but at the time she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And she had surgery to remove the cancer, but it had spread to her lymph node under her arm and then to her spine. And she went through a treatment, not a traditional Western treatment, but she went to a wellness center and essentially made dramatic changes to her life. She followed a plant-based protocol. I mean, she removed not only processed junk and sugars and, you know, bad foods for you, but she removed all animal products. So no dairy, no eggs, no animal foods at all, no meat, fish, whatever it is, all got cut out. And she adopted a whole food, plant-based vegan diet. And a lot of it was raw. It was virtually all organic. And by following that change, and also I'm sure other changes to her life, and she reverse her condition. She sort of halted it in its tracks. And I want to be clear too, that, you know, I never want to make a statement as though, hey, just adopt a plant-based diet and you will reverse your cancer. But I will say that her making that change in her life really did have a dramatic impact on her health, at least as a case study of one. And it introduced me to the power of food, the power of plant food in particular. And it kind of opened my eyes to food's ability to nourish and heal the body. And that is what put me on the path to really, really get into it. There's no doubt that when I was into martial arts, I understood the importance of nutrition. I was advised ways to eat and drink and things like that from the people who taught me martial arts, but it was completely taken to a new level in 2012 with this, you know, family story that I just shared.
Well, it's interesting because I recognize that really, you know, was what propelled you into what you're doing now professionally. But one of the things that I know, knowing you well, is you've always been very curious and interested in lots of different things.
Yeah.
Of which nutrition has been one since I've known you for 20 odd years. You know, whether it was reading on why we shouldn't be, you know, drinking milk and gut health and all these things that, you know, you're more, I think, aware and interested in that than the average Joe, which may have sort of primed you for when something dramatic like that happened to be like, whoa, this kind of confirms a little bit of what I felt. And now you've kind of gone, but at the time you were running a successful, you know, digital marketing company. And I know that story shifted you from doing that to aligning kind of with more of your belief systems. How did you decide to make that actual shift? Because it's dramatic to make a pivot like that when you were already kind of at the top of your game in your field to then start, you know, to start something new is pretty, to catch a phrase, radical.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I was co-founder of a really great digital marketing and advertising agency here in LA, and we had a lot of influential global brands as clients. And it was a great experience. But I ultimately, so this happened, this incident with my sister happened while I was at the agency. So it put me on, again, this path to try to figure out what is the optimal human diet. I started reading books on this topic and watching talks and debates. And I was just really fascinated by it. So that almost became a side passion just in my life. And ultimately, my partners and I, we sold the agency. And so I knew that at some point I would be transitioning out of that business and ultimately doing something else. And by the time I did that, I really felt like I could take a lot of the skills that I had developed in strategy and brand building and thinking through customer experience and other things that brands hired us to do for them. And I can apply those skills to something that I became really passionate about, which was plant-based living.
And I've talked to you at length about the kind of what, and I've described this to others about the kind of three pillars of why people become vegan. One is kind of health, one is sustainability in the environment, and one is animal advocacy. And I know that for the beginning section, when you were kind of quasi-vegetarian, you hadn't gone full vegan, a lot of it was kind of health-based. And then there was a shift where the animal advocate in you was, you know, released. Can you tell me a little bit about that and that experience and how it really impacted you?
Yeah. And I'll start with the health piece that you brought up. So, right, when this happened with my sister, right, I wasn't thinking about animal ethics and I wasn't thinking about the environment. Those came later. I was really thinking, what is the healthiest way to eat? And I was ultimately exposed to a lot of information about plant-based living, right? And I watched a movie called Forks Over Knives, which was one of the earlier movies about, you know, promoting a vegan lifestyle, and ultimately saw other documentaries as well. I read books. I had discovered a guy named Dr. Michael Greger in nutritionfacts.org and was watching his lectures and read his book called How Not to Die. And just over years, I've just been consuming more and more content about this topic. But again, when you're doing it for health, I was open to other ideas. So that's why I found the debates with like the paleo doctor or the keto doctor talking opposite the plant-based doctor. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And I don't know, should I be eating some grass-fed beef? And is that good for me? And ultimately, I really came to believe with all the research that I did, and again, I'm not a doctor, but I know how to read, right? I know how to listen to doctors, and just with all the knowledge I accumulated, I came up with my own conclusion that plant-based living made the most sense. But when you do it for health, you know, I was essentially 80 to 90% there in terms of how strict I was. My feeling was if I eat really well the vast majority of the time, what difference does it make what I do on occasion? Right. So if I'm taking a meeting in a steakhouse, okay, I'll get the ribeye, right? Again, because it's one out of however many meals that I would do that. But then in the beginning of 2018, so now we're like 3 years ago now, I watched a talk that really introduced me to the idea of it brought up the topic of animal ethics and what it is that we do on a day-to-day basis to exploit these animals really needlessly, you know? And it opened my eyes to something I had never thought about, probably never wanted to think about. Like most people, I think there's some cognitive dissonance there. And once I saw that, that's when I stepped over the line and was 100% plant-based. In fact, I decided there's no reason for me to ever spend another dollar to support animal exploitation. So that's not just in diet. You know, I don't buy leather. I don't buy any product made from an animal, tested on an animal. I'm not going to have a horse pull me around in a carriage. I just don't need to, you know, I believe animals are here on this planet with us, not for us. So I just avoid taking advantage of them.
I want to get back to that a little bit, because obviously it's a big part of what you're about, both personally and professionally.
Yeah.
I want to go back just to kind of a more general question about your experiences, because one of the things I find interesting is the unexpected places we find ourselves. So you've worked for global brands, you've been traveled a lot, I know, both with your current company and obviously in your life. Is there any place that you kind of figured you were kind of surprised you found yourself? And that could be a place or talking to someone where if you thought about that 5 or even 10 years ago, you'd be like, I can't believe I'm actually having this conversation or that I'm in this place. Any place that kind of a person that comes to mind?
Well, I'll tell you one place that's interesting is where you and I met, which is we're two guys from the US and we met in Australia as study abroad students. So who would have predicted that one? Sometimes you meet people in the most unlikely place. But I will say that, during my time at the agency, we had a lot of big brands as clients. And occasionally we worked with brands that are actually tied to, pretty significant individual people. And there was some work that we did for OWN, the Oprah Winfrey Network. And, there were a small handful of meetings that I had with Oprah, and she had lived up to all of the things that you would hope she would be. And seeing her on TV, I just thought she was a pretty amazing person and really thoughtful and really smart, even in small, closed room settings. And, there was one conversation in particular that was memorable, that was just a few of us in the room. But I think if you were to have cut to a few years earlier, would I have predicted that or a handful of other meetings like that? Probably not.
It always makes me, having worked in the film industry and met, as you have, lots of, successful, famous people.
Yeah.
When you hear the story of someone that you hope is as generous and giving and amazing as
yeah.
the team, it kind of makes, restores my faith in humanity. And Oprah is definitely one of those amazing storytellers on her show and in general. Do you think that being good at telling stories is a skill that people can develop, or do you have to kind of be born with it?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think there are some people who just maybe they're either a little more introverted or a little quieter. It's harder for them to sort of tell stories. It's just maybe not as innate. Mm-hmm. Or doesn't come as naturally. But I do believe that with a little bit of practice, anybody can become a storyteller. I mean, again, I think there's levels of storytelling, and it's maybe hard for someone who, hasn't had that as a core strength for their whole life to become like an expert storyteller. But I'm sure there are many examples of where that does happen. But so I would say, yeah, everyone can become a storyteller. And I also believe, even more importantly, that everyone has a story to tell. Everyone's got some really interesting things to share with the world. And so it's one of the reasons it's so important to listen and not just talk and hear those stories as people share them.
Preaching to the choir there. And that old expression of God gave us, two ears and one mouth, use them proportionally. I'm guilty of not always adhering to that advice, but I'm a work in progress. I like to tell.
Right. There you go.
I want to go back to kind of where society is in terms of their health.
Yeah.
And, we know obesity is on the rise, and it's been, they're all these diseases and why, I'm curious why you think people aren't, that a lot of people know what they should be eating. Even if they're not plant-based, they know a lot of the junk that they eat. Why do you think people aren't healthier?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that people know what they should be eating.
Deep fried Twinkie, no one should ever eat that.
No one should eat that. And there are people that do, but I also think there's a lot of market confusion. And again, there's so many conflicting pieces of information out there that I think people do have a hard time sifting through all the noise and figuring out what they should or shouldn't be eating. So I wish that was clearer and something I hope to at least have some impact on with what I'm doing now and creating some clarity there. But, you know, look, people love the food that they eat. People are addicted to certain foods. It's like getting addicted to sugar or other things. And it's really bad for you. It's something you want to minimize or cut out entirely if you can. But you get into routine, you develop unhealthy habits, unfortunately, when you marry that with the confusion that people have or feeling really confident that they know something is good for them, but it actually isn't. Because of misinformation that's out there, I think that just compounds the problem. And so it's complicated and layered.
That's a good point, because when I think about diet, which is in itself a concept that I think is troubling, you know, that Oh, if you're on this diet, but there's so many, the fads that come, and one day it's, you know, eat this, and the next day, no, don't eat that. And, you know, and then so, and so it flip-flops a lot. And I think that definitely causes confusion. We've learned now that, you know, green vegetables are bad, and like, no, come on now. Like, and I think, again, being able to sift through that is hard for the average. And then there's the convenience and, you know, and
for sure,
and other reasons why people choose, you know, fast food is, I think, that people use it because they can't be bothered to think or do differently.
It's part of why I find the ethical argument to be so strong for avoiding animal products, for example. And by the way, there's a difference between eating healthy whole plant foods and just following a vegan diet, because you can eat a lot of vegan junk food, right? So you want to be careful not to conflate those two. I'm not suggesting that I never eat vegan junk food, but I do eat a lot of very healthy foods. But the ethical argument is an interesting one that ties in with your question, because if people are trying to eat healthy and they eat healthy a bunch, they're going to cheat here and there. And it just seems like, oh, does it really matter? You know, just this one more meal or this one more snack that I'm having. And people often lose sight of the cumulative effect of what they're eating and the significant negative impact it can have on their health, or positive impact if you're eating the right things. But when you see, for example, the suffering at the other end of some of your decisions, that is a line in the sand that makes it much easier for people to draw and never deviate. You know, if for example, I know this is often sounds like a ridiculous example for me to bring up, but you know, there are certain parts of the world where people eat dogs, like in parts of China or South Korea, and even if it's not most people, it's many. And if I was to ask 99.9% of people in the United States if they would eat a dog, they would say no. I mean, the very idea would be just crazy to them. And, you know, if you ask people, why would they not eat a dog? You know, they would say, well, a dog's a friend, it's a companion, it's a pet, it's not a food animal. You know, there's no question or doubt in people's mind that these are emotional, conscious, sentient beings that absolutely feel pain and suffer and don't want to die. Nobody doubts that for a second. Once you make the connection that a pig or a cow or a chicken or a fish or any of these other animals that we eat are actually no different in that regard, they may have varying levels of intelligence. Pigs are actually smarter than dogs. Maybe a chicken's not as smart as a dog. It doesn't matter. They all suffer and they don't need to. And once you make that connection and you realize that every time you buy an animal-based product, you are essentially funding that suffering, you are perpetuating it, I think that gets people to go, wait, what am I doing? Because now it's not just about, oh, I'm just cheating and it's me. There's a third party victim, because you're never gonna pay somebody to harm a dog. So why would you pay someone to harm another animal? It's totally arbitrary, and we don't need to eat them to be healthy. So that's why I find that piece of it to tie in with your question about why do people not eat as well as they could. I think sometimes they're not looking at it from the right angle or haven't thought about it in this way.
And in terms of, you know, you mentioned earlier about the cognitive dissonance that, you know, a lot of times with a lot of different things, we, you know, ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
How do we change that?
Well, it's through education and sharing of ideas. You know, I think people often have a hard time listening to ideas that are totally counter to theirs, especially as it relates to eating. You know, nobody wants to feel like they're making either unethical decisions or unhealthy, you know, I'm eating a food that I ate my whole life and my parents told me it's good for me. And now you're telling me that it's not good for me. You know, I mean, when you go against the grain in this way, it may not land so well depending on the individual, but I think education and communicating these ideas is the best way to institute the kind of change that I think we'd all want to see as a society. And, you know, I think we all share similar interests and we all have common goals and we all want to sort of nurture ideas that sort of bring us towards as much well-being as possible. You know, to me, well-being of people and well-being of animals, reduce suffering as much as we can. And so I don't know how to effectively do that outside of educating people and making people think of, allowing people to think of ideas that they've never thought about before and slowly getting change over time as these ideas ripple through culture.
It's interesting because one of the things that you and I have talked about that I find really compelling is that the supply and demand. And so that if people make that choice not to spend their dollar on these things, that eventually the market will shift. And the example you give that I love, which is when we were growing up, when it comes to milk, there was 2% milk or maybe it's chocolate milk. And now you look and there's, 25 or at least, nut, oat, rice, milks, so that there's now these other options available so that the choice is easier. I'm curious if you think that will continue and how important is that? And how different is it for the, in terms of trying to make the change before people are ready for it, as opposed to waiting until there's a demand for it, which comes first, the need or the, or the demand?
Yeah. Well, there is definitely a demand. And to sort of just add a little bit of color to the example that you brought up. Yeah. It is something I mention to people when they say, look, I'm just one person. Right. So even if I became vegan tomorrow, all my neighbors, all my friends, the rest of my family, they're all continuing to buy animal products. I'm just one person. What difference is it going to make? And it does make a difference. You are voting with your dollars three times a day, and you can continue to fund an industry that drives further exploitation, or you can fund an industry that's supporting plant-based products that's certainly better for health, environment, and certainly animals. And that is an easy decision to make because there's comparable products now. I mean, I could eat a burger, I can eat cheese, I can eat pizza, I can have milk, I can have eggs. I mean, there's versions of, there's plant-based versions of essentially everything now. So it's pretty remarkable. But yeah, the milk example is a good one because, right, when we were growing up, you had skim 2% whole and chocolate milk all came from a cow. And now you've got, 30 kinds of milks in the refrigerator section at the supermarket, whether it's oat milk, soy milk, cashew milk, almond milk. I mean, the list goes on, right? That industry is continuing to flourish because lots of individual people are making the option to buy the plant-based milk instead of the dairy milk, right? And the accumulation, the cumulative effect of those individual decisions is very, very significant because again, we live in a supply and demand system and we want to drive the demand for these products that have this beneficial ripple effect that I was describing before. So it really does matter for every single person. And by the way, the whole idea of if everyone else is doing it, why should I bother? I mean, if you apply that philosophy to virtually anything else, it doesn't hold water. So that is not a good excuse.
last night, Need and I were listening to Emmanuel Acho, he's the host of Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. And he's really opening the conversation about race relations and all these different things. But there was a quote that he gave last night that I think is perfect for what you're describing in terms of I'm just one person, and he paraphrased it, but I just found it, which is don't let your inability to do everything undermine your determination to do something.
Yeah.
Meaning, you know, that just because we can't solve the problem doesn't mean we can't contribute towards its solution. And I think that's, you know, kind of when you're saying, what can I do? We can all do something, you know, by our choices every day.
Yeah. And I think this is a particularly important one for a few reasons. You know, one, sometimes people do ask me, you know, there are so many issues that we face in the world. Why are you standing up for pigs and chickens and cows and all this when they're human beings are facing so many issues? Mm-hmm. And I would often challenge somebody to think of an issue that impacts more humans than this one. So yes, we want to help the animals, and that is a big driver for me. Mm-hmm. But you know, the number one killer of men and women on the planet is heart disease. And we know that this is largely a lifestyle disease that's fully reversible on a plant-based diet. In fact, you can halt or reverse or prevent, I think it's like 15 of the top 16 leading causes of death just by changing your lifestyle and adopting a plant-based diet. And there's so much evidence in support of that. So we know that there's a human benefit, right? And we also know something we didn't talk about yet here is just the environmental impacts of animal agriculture, which are significant. You know, whether you're talking about deforestation or usage of resources like water or greenhouse gas emissions and just environmental degradation as a whole, acidification of the ocean, species extinction. I mean, there's this whole list of things that we are doing to the planet that are in significant part driven by animal agriculture. Again, just in an era where we don't need to do this anymore. Maybe we had to eat animals for long stretches of human history. We don't need to now. We're in 2021. We just don't have to do this anymore. So, you know, I think that because there's ethical, environmental, and health benefits with just global implications, I am hard-pressed to think of many issues that should be of higher importance to people when you really do peel back the layers and start to think about it. And so, yeah, each individual's actions are significant.
And I'm gonna shift slightly, because I think while this is really important, I'm kind of curious about something about, so you were working, you're at the top of your game, you know, from anyone's kind of barometer, I think they would say you were successful. I'm always interested to hear what people think of how they would define success. And I leave that open to you. So how would you define success in life?
Yeah, I certainly think that if you wake up in the morning and you're looking forward to doing what you need to do that day, you're pretty successful. You know, and I'm only talking professionally. Obviously, broad success in life includes surrounding yourself with family and friends that you love and that love you. And there's so much fulfillment and happiness that comes from a wide variety of factors. But just assuming that your question is targeting a more sort of professionally oriented answer, I do think it's just about the pure love and passion for what you're doing. And I've heard many people provide advice like that over the years: follow what you love and the rest will fall into place. It really is true, because if you're following something that you don't love, it's just hard to motivate. It's hard to get out of bed in the morning. It's hard to get, if you're not excited about it, how much energy can you really put into it? And then it, you know, that will ultimately hold back the success that you could potentially realize if you were actually following something that you truly loved and cared about. So that to me would be the number one piece of advice and definer.
The other version I've heard of it, and I agree with that completely, is if you love what you do, you won't work a day in your life. You know, something.
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree with that 100%, because even when you do something you love, there's times where you—
There are always moments.
Effort, but it's worth it. I think that's what I would say, the work.
There are always moments. I know we'll get to radical superfoods, but it's one thing about the company to enjoy the day-to-day activities. But the fact that when there's like a bigger mission behind it, of you know that you're having a positive impact, that adds further sort of positive fuel to the fire.
Segues to my question about inspiration. So, I know we've talked about that, you know, what inspires you. And so how important is it for what you're doing that it is purpose driven?
No, I mean, it's critical. I mean, when I left the agency world, I knew that the next thing that I wanted to do was gonna have real purpose behind it and try to create impact and make a difference. You know, you can have a successful company and make a positive impact on the world. Those two things do not have to be mutually exclusive. And I think the impact part is really important. I think if more and more people thought about positively impacting the world, we would be in a better place. Because again, we wanna work towards broad well-being for all people, I would say, and animals and planet. But you know, we wanna make improvement across the board, because again, we've got one planet and all of us on it that share it. And so let's make it as good as we can.
Definitely true. Not easy to do, but at least we should strive for that.
Not easy. Everyone's got to play their small part.
Speaking, I'm curious, you know, in terms of advice. So if you were going to give advice to your 21-year-old self, knowing what you know now, what would it be?
To my 21-year-old self? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if when I was 21, I actually was thinking then, just figure out what you truly love and do that. I think when you're 21, you're just, you know, trying to figure out different opportunities and what could you do and forge a path. That would definitely be advice I would give to my younger self. I would probably be advising myself to do as much listening as possible. You know, I think listening is a very difficult skill to develop. I think it's really hard for everybody. I think it can be challenging even today for me and others. And it, sometimes you don't even realize it. You know, if you ever catch yourself in a conversation with somebody, or maybe even in a room full of people in a conference room, and somebody says something, and then you think about something you want to say in response, and then you're waiting for your moment to actually make that comment. And because you're in your head waiting to jump in, where's my right moment? You're not even listening to the next two or three comments, or maybe two or three people who are talking. And you could sort of miss other key moments that are even relevant. Maybe even the moment passed you by. And so listening is a really key skill.
I ask you an interesting question about that.
Yeah.
Was that a justification for interrupting? Because I have this bad habit of interrupting because I'm worried that if I stop and don't share, that by the time I go for, I'll forgotten or it won't be relevant. And I know the answer is no, but it was a rhetorical question.
Yeah, well, there are absolutely moments where it's, you know, warranted to interrupt, especially if someone's saying, when you said X, Y, Z, and then they're actually misstating what you said or something, and maybe you need to jump in to create an immediate, or provide an immediate correction. But generally speaking, I think listening goes a long way. And again, probably something that we all need to work on.
I want to get into radical superfoods for a second in terms of the trend in health and nutrition in general.
Yeah.
What are you trying to do with radical? You know, what is the mission? What is the purpose of creating these plant-based superfood products?
Yeah, well, I'll take a half step back and describe the company, at least from a high level. You can almost think of the company as having two layers to it, right? The top layer is the part that's more evident today in our development, which is just having these great, quote unquote, superfood products that are nutritious, they're functional, and they're, you know, they taste great and they're easy to incorporate into your daily routine. So people understand what nutritious means. Functional, basically, you know, people have various functional needs. So if you were coffee, for example, caffeine is a functional ingredient. So if you're tired and you need energy and you consume caffeine, you know, you get the functional benefit of energy. There are lots of ingredients that provide different functional benefits, whether it's for brain health or memory or focus, energy, sleep, stress support, immunity, things like that, right? So we figure you create products that provide nutritional and or functional value that, again, they taste good and they're easy. That would be a way to make it relatively low lift for somebody to start to incorporate these plant-based you know, healthy foods into their daily routine. Mm-hmm. And so that's why when I, it's funny, I have a couple of them with me, but when, you know, these are like our hydration drinks, they're called Radical Elements, and they're powders. Like you would scoop it into water, shake up your water bottle, and you've got it in your water. And, you know, these provide added hydration, and they provide stress support or energy and focus and immune support. Like we've put really great ingredients in them. So that is one part of it, is creating great products that people like and want to keep using. But then over time, we're looking forward to rolling out more of the technology platform that underlies it all, that allows us to personalize products and protocol and tips and advice that people get to really optimize their well-being and build healthy habits. So that if you are someone who's tired during the day and need energy, and you're not sleeping well at night and want to improve your sleep, you're not just taking products that help you do that, but you're actually making little adjustments to your day-to-day behavior and lifestyle that will actually help you build, again, habits to improve those conditions. So it's really both. It's data and technology meets the food and beverage space.
So it's interesting because this happens to be one of the rare times of the day that I don't have a Radical on my desk, because it's that I have, you know, the passion fruit in the morning, and I love it, and it's great. And
yeah.
And then, which my Nita loves that one better, slightly more than the dragon fruit, which I have almost every day at dinner. That my son Ethan is, I always need to make extra because I know I'm gonna lose a third of it. And I always offer to make his own, and he's like, no, I'm fine. And then continues to drink mine. So I want to go back to something that you said, because I think this is something that people are curious about, and it's in the name of your company. So the idea of superfoods, you kind of had it in inverted quotes. So what is a superfood? What makes something a superfood? Is it a marketing thing, or is there, you know, how would you define what makes something super?
Yeah, I think it has become a bit of a marketing thing. We almost didn't even use the word superfoods, because I periodically see that word used on food that's kind of masquerading as something that's good for you, and it's not, and it claims to be kind of superfoody, but it's not really. But, you know, I find superfoods, I'm a big advocate for whole plant-based foods. So, you know, if you take, like, one of the ingredients in this product is maki berry. It's kind of a unique berry. It's high antioxidant. And so if we say that we have organic maki berry in here, which we do, we are, you know, those berries get picked. They get freeze dried, which means they get frozen. They get put into a vacuum chamber. You know, you draw out all the liquid. You're left with like a crunchy berry that, you know, if you've ever had freeze dried snacks and they're super crunchy and tasty, you're just removing the moisture, the water, and then you can pulverize what's left and to crush it into a powder. But it really started as a whole plant food, and it retains the nutrients. You've just lost the water. You even still have fiber. These are the kinds of ingredients that we're using in these products that, you know, to me, something that is a superfood is either a whole plant food that provides real nutritional value, and or functional value. Like we use an ingredient called L-theanine from green tea, which is just very supportive in a variety of ways. We actually use it as part of a stress support boost, and we use it as part of an energy boost when we combine it with caffeine and something called rhodiola. But there's so many benefits to these various botanicals and ingredients, but it's got to meet a certain criteria for something to be a superfood. It's either just something that's really nutrient dense that no one's going to debate, like broccoli. No one's going to dispute, okay, broccoli is good for you. I think we all know that. But other things that we may use that have claims behind them, like for energy or like for promoting a sense of calm, we want to make sure that they're evidence-based and that there's real science behind it, you know, double-blind placebo-controlled studies whenever possible to show not only does a particular ingredient provide a benefit, but in what amount do you need to consume that ingredient to get the benefit? So you don't just sprinkle a little bit of that ingredient into a product and you can claim that it contains that ingredient, but it's not in any amount that will impact you. So we want to make sure that we meet
that term that the food industry uses.
Well, yeah, we like call it fairy dusting, yeah. Right? Yeah, it's just sprinkle a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and there you go. Now you can claim it's inside, even though it doesn't do anything for you. So it's about using the right ingredient in the right amount. But that's how I would define a superfood, something that either has a significant nutritional or functional benefit.
I want to, you know, I usually ask people what's next, but I know what's next because I'm super excited about it. But you just launched a product.
We did.
And can you tell us a bit about it?
Not only can I tell you about it, I actually have a box of it right here.
Oh, you're going to make me jealous because my wife and I are waiting for it. What are we doing it?
Yeah, so this is called Super Coco, and it is it's our vegan superfood hot chocolate. So, you know, inside this kind of pack, you get little 12 individual servings. You can just rip open and you could either stir it in a pot or you could add it to a mug. You can mix it with water. You can mix it with your favorite plant-based milk. And it's really delicious, indulgent hot chocolate. And it has a whole host of ingredients that you would never know are in there. This has been kid tested and kids will drink it up. And again, it's like dessert. But I'll tell you a little bit about what's in here. And again, we like to think it's pretty disruptive because we've never seen hot chocolate with even remotely these kinds of ingredients. But each serving has organic pea protein in it. So it's got 6 grams of organic pea protein. And then we have a veggie and greens and fruit and ancient grains and seeds blend that's in there. So it's everything from broccoli, kale, spinach, cauliflower, beet, carrot on the veggie side. And on the fruit side, it's things like strawberry, blueberry, elderberry, and 4 other fruit. And then the ancient grains and seeds that are all gluten-free would be like chia and quinoa and oat and millet. And it's all in there. And we use 2 types of cacao. We use an organic cacao and then an alkalized cacao that actually brings an additional richness, almost like that Dutch cocoa flavor. And the whole thing has 1 gram of sugar in it. Now, most hot chocolates have like way over 20 grams of sugar, 25, 28, sometimes over 30. This has 1 that's naturally occurring from the oats and the fruit. And then we use a tiny bit of organic stevia to sweeten it. And again, people have it. They're like, oh my gosh, this just tastes like amazing hot chocolate, but it's almost like you're drinking a salad.
But it tastes like a regular.
It tastes like hot chocolate.
So is it because of the proportions? Is there like a lot of cacao and not much fruit and vegetable that can make it still taste that way?
There's actually a fair amount of fruit and veggies in there. Like there's a lot. There's a good amount of cacao. But if you look at our ingredient panel, the very first ingredient is pea protein. And then we get into our veggie fruit, our blend with the ancient grains and seeds and all those ingredients is literally that blend is the next thing on the list. So there's like a real amount of these in there. And you know, it's 80 calories per serving. And between the fat content that's in there, the protein that's in there, the carbs that are in there, you can almost use it as a mini meal, like a little, you know, a complete nutrition mini meal. 80 calories is probably not enough for most people to have as like, it's your only thing for breakfast or lunch. But if it's 11 in the morning and you're trying to sort of sustain yourself between breakfast and lunch, it's a perfect kind of
snack. Can you have it hot or cold?
Yeah, you can. We're sort of billing it as a hot cocoa to have hot, but you can absolutely have it cold. And people have already had it cold in just testing that we've done. You could just put it in a shaker bottle with ice, or if you want to throw it in a blender, you can, and shake it up. And then it almost drinks more like a shake, right? Instead of a hot cocoa, because now it's cold and kind of frothy.
Is it like chocolate milk?
It is kind of like chocolate milk. It'll have a slightly different consistency, but yes, it becomes more like chocolate milk, and you can even make pops out of it, like little frozen pops, and there's lots of fun things that you could do. People can toss it into a blender and mix it with all kinds of things, but we designed it so that you can have it on its own, again, even just with water. It's delicious when you add like a plant-based milk to it, because you get even more creaminess, but it has ingredients in it already that provide a natural creaminess even when you just mix it with water. So
Well, we're excited to taste it. I can tell you that.
Excited for you to taste it.
If someone is new to Radical and you're going to tell them what you stand for, how would you answer that question?
Well, on its face, like from a, you know, we could get into the impact stuff in a moment. And that ties in with our earlier conversation. Mm-hmm. But our ultimate goal is to have people build healthy habits in their lifestyle, right? And so that's why we know that a healthy habit centers around hydration, for example, and making sure that you're drinking enough water. So that's why, you know, again, you take these products, Radical Elements, they make your water taste better. They add more hydration because of like coconut water and electrolytes, and you add other botanicals and people go, oh my gosh, I'm enjoying water more than I've ever enjoyed it. Now you're hydrating better and you could build a healthier, you know, water drinking habit, which is good.
Which I've definitely done.
Chocolate is, oh, you know, you like sweets. Let's build a healthier habit around, okay, you get your sweet, you get your indulgence, but you're getting real plant-based nutrition. And again, you're not going to be living off of Radical Superfoods products. When we ultimately release our complete nutrition shake, that could be a full meal replacement. But a lot of the products in our pipeline are really just designed to integrate into your daily routine and be very easy. You know, we're not having you cook. You don't have to follow a recipe. They're all just like easy to make. Typically adding it to, you know, if it's a coffee creamer, for example, you would just add it to coffee. And most of these products, you just add to water, hot water for the cocoa or cold water for the hydration drink. So it's very easy. But so, sorry. So getting back to your question, you know, the mission is help have people build healthy habits, have people improve their diet, really the nutrients that they're consuming, again, from both a nutritional and functional standpoint. And then in the big, we want to build this company in a way that supports sort of plant-based principles, meaning not only better for your health, but taking into account the environmental impacts and taking into account animal agriculture impacts by not using animals.
We could talk a lot about this, and we do. I love what you're doing, and love consuming what you're doing. I'm now at the point where we get to kind of rapid fire questions.
Let's do it.
Just these are meant to be quick, but you know, we'll see how we get.
All right.
Is it better to be a planner or a doer?
Better to be a planner or a doer. Well, I would say a doer if I had to choose between the two, because at the end of the day, you have to get things done and that's how you make change. So it's good to be a planner and a doer, but if I had to choose one, a doer.
Should stories always have happy endings?
No, because life stories don't always have happy endings. So I think there's more to learn from a broader range of stories, some of which are happy and some of which are not.
Do you have a favorite song or musical genre?
Not particularly. I'm one of those people who's very easy when it comes to music, and I get into my car and like turn on a station on satellite and whatever plays, I'm relatively happy, and I let my kids drive the music choices. So I'm pretty go with the flow when it comes to music.
I'll just have to a side note, which is I remember when my children were really young, we were like, we're not gonna just play kids music because I don't need to listen to Wheels on the Bus in the car.
Yeah.
So you just play pop music, and my children all love pop music now as a result. You have a favorite emoji?
Do I have a favorite emoji? I don't know why, but I love the face. It's not a smiley face. It's just two eyes and a straight line like this, not smiling and not frowning. And I so often just, I might be in a conversation and I just feel that. I don't know why, but that's probably a favorite.
How about a favorite social media platform?
You know what? I do really like Instagram, but I think I spend the most time on LinkedIn, which, you know, I guess it's a social media platform. I think most of us think of it as that, but it, you know, it's just so different than the others because it's more professionally focused. Mm-hmm. But I think LinkedIn would be my platform of choice.
Can you name a book that left a lasting impression on you?
Yeah, there are two that are related actually to plant-based living. One is How Not to Die by Dr. Michael Greger, which really gets into why he advocates so strongly for whole food, plant-based eating and all of the benefits. And it, when he says how not to die, he basically means how to not get heart disease, how to not get cancer, how to not get right, and how to not die from those things. And it shows the impact of diet. And another one is a book called Finding Ultra by Rich Roll. And that book kind of also had an impact on me as I was developing this lifestyle. I thought it was very good.
Now, this is going to be a challenging question because I know you and I love movies. So I want you to try and name one of your favorite movies.
One of my favorite movies.
I know that's all.
All right. One of my favorite movies has always been Searching for Bobby Fischer. I do love that movie. Just about a little kid based on a true story who's just a chess prodigy. And that movie, I've seen it a handful of times, and I think it's really terrific. So that one ranks up there. It's hard to say, is that my number one favorite or not?
No.
But I think that's forever going to have a spot in my top 10.
We just watched it with the family, and it's awesome. It's
really good movie.
It's so good. Can you name one thing you can't live without other than radical superfoods?
How about my family? That would be a tough one. You know, I'm just really blessed to have the family that I do. And that's easy. Can't live without that.
And if you could be credited with inventing something, what would it be and why?
That is a tough one. You know, it's always easy to be like, oh, what if I was the one that invented the light bulb or how to harness electricity and get it in everyone's house? Those would be good. But I'll tell you, maybe it's a future invention. Maybe it's just the thing that will ultimately have the greatest impact in moving people in a direction that minimizes exploitation, maximizes well-being, maximizes the health of our planet. I don't know what that is yet, that one thing, but whatever that is, that would be a nice one to have your name attached to.
Well, I think you're at least starting that with the products because they are minimizing and maximizing those things that are important.
Yep, agreed.
Obviously, you're promoting, you know, the Radical Elements, which are amazing, and now Super Coco. If people want to go and get their hands on the product or find out more about Radical and you, what's the best place for them to do so?
Yeah, so they can come to our website, which is radicalsuperfoods.com, and we spell radical without the vowels. So radical is just RDCL, radicalsuperfoods.com. Let's see, you could kind of see the logo there. And yeah, so we have, you can actually, at least as of this recording date, you can pre-order Super Coco and it's going to ship probably as soon as next week. And then we have Radical Elements, the two hydration products, which are available right now. And then to find out more about me or connect with me, I think the best platform is LinkedIn, which I referenced earlier. It's just my full name, Donnie Makower, on LinkedIn.
We'll put that in the show.
And by the way, we do have an active promo code running. Mm-hmm. And it's just Get Radical, G-E-T, and then R-D-C-L, all one word. So if someone was on our site and is in checkout and they type in Get Radical, it will take 20% off their order.
Awesome.
So, I mean, people can take advantage of it if they'd like.
I'm sure people will. Donnie, we could talk all day and some days we do. and I, you know, am really happy that you came on and to have this kind of, to let other people know how great you are and what you're doing, because I think it is really incredible. And the passion that you have for this has definitely had influence on me as I have given up meat and really enjoy Beyond Burgers. And I want to thank you for, you know, your honesty and your, you know, passion for what you're doing. And I want to thank you for helping us connect the dots.
Thank you. Well, the feeling is mutual, and it was really great to be here. So thanks for having me on. It was awesome.
Thank you for taking your time to listen to this podcast. Please subscribe on your preferred podcast platform so you don't miss any future episodes. If you could also do me a favor and please leave a review on iTunes, I would really appreciate that. Remember, story matters and is the best way to connect the dots.